Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John, Sue.
John, no, he is already burning things down. Let's see if he gets to the end of the show and is still alive. Welcome to Pottercast number 146.
Come on.
Hello.
Burning artichoke. Things to burn.
No, let's be clear. You were boiling artichokes, and somehow you managed to burn them. That's an accomplishment.
Now, come now. Artichokes soak up the water, and I even had a lid on, too. And
you know what? Rachel Ray is going to get
I'm going to put that picture online. You guys, you know, I'll own it. That was stupid of me, but I will own it, and you can see
all
the
right.
picture.
Well, welcome to Pottercast 146. I'm here again with the now full Pottercast quartet. I'm Melissa here with John, Sue, and the lovely Frack, who has slipped into this little group here like a glove or
well,
something.
Thank you very much.
Say hi, Frack!
Hi. Where are you at, John?
He's from the past!
I'm from the past!
Okay, before we go further into this week's show, which is a great one, let's hear from our friends at notaudible.com, audiblekids.com.
Ooh, really?
Oh,
Audible
my.
Audible Kids.
This podcast is brought to you by audiblekids.com, the Internet's leading source for children's audiobooks. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblekids.com/pottercast for more details.
All right, this week's show, we have what? We have a Bit by Bit, a Scribby 5, a Counting Conundrums,
yeah.
A Phoenix Files?
Mm-hmm, helpful.
A Phoenix Files,
ooh,
sure.
I don't know, I'm asking.
Yes.
Phoenix Files and Bit by Bit.
No Counting Conundrums?
No Counting Conundrums, for sure. Oh, I want to do a Canon Conundrum.
I guess we can maybe do a Canon Conundrum
we
if
got,
you'd like.
We just got to keep our discussion tailored before we...
I'm gonna let Sue decide, because she was the good lady who
yes.
prepared the notes this week, because I fail.
Well, oh. And I fail too.
I think we should do it in honor of our recent staff member, who was just here.
Oh, our dear departed Sybil.
Yes. Oh, right, yeah. What happened? Did she die?
No, John. We fired her. She was drinking
oh,
on the
right.
job.
Oh, we can't do that. There's only a few
only
people
sherry bottles.
On staff
you can,
get away
in
with
the
that.
Background.
Yeah, only Dumbledore allows that stuff. I run a tighter ship.
Yeah.
We had to get rid of her.
Yeah.
So yeah, so let's do a Counting Conundrums about what house she might have been in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Sure. Sounds fun.
Continuing sorting.
Okay.
And guess what, all you peoples? We might even have a little announcement about the acting troupe at the end of the show.
Well, I think we really should.
Except for the part that we've been forgetting about it for weeks for some ridiculous reason.
Mm-hmm. Ridiculous?
Yes.
All right, Sue, so what's in the news this week?
Well, we keep hearing more from Miss Jo. This one is another, back in February,
Miss Jo.
Oh, more better known to as J.K. Rowling, I should say. She had appeared at the James Joyce Awards over in Dublin, Ireland. Someone had attended the event, but we were able to get a transcript. And now we have a transcript of she took up a lot of questions. And Jo said that she talked about the importance of Snape and Dumbledore to the series and that I found this really, really interesting, but she said that the series is based around their two plot lines. What do you think about that? Oh, that was really...
Makes sense.
And then she continued on to say, too, that the plot lines of Dumbledore and Snape in Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows were actually the two most important characters aside from the trio. And I thought that was really interesting when you reflect back that that's what she was thinking. So she developed their plot lines right away.
So was Harry a pawn in the histories and foibles and mistakes of Dumbledore and Snape?
I think that's what she's looking at it.
Well, it's a pawn. I don't know if pawn's the right term, but I think if he's subject to him and he's cleaning up their mess or, you know.
Yeah. Poor Harry.
But, you know.
Everybody else screws up.
I know, that's why I was really happy with the epilogue because it was nice. Like, you know what? Harry had such a screwed up life his whole life. It's nice that he can settle down into some quote-unquote monotony of just being a regular family.
Exactly.
But it's really true. I mean, you could look at as a story as Snape's journey, you know, because what Harry went through, although is his journey, what his adventures were actually the cause or the result of the actions of Dumbledore and Snape. So it's kind of like, you know, how Frodo's journey was reaction, you know, kind of Like, you know.
That's a good example.
Well, something that I want to ask her next time is I was talking with Andrew Slack today from the HP Alliance. We were talking
Andrew Slack.
We were talking about Dumbledore and I mean, about Harry and how 19 years later we saw that he had a normal life. Mm-hmm. He had a great life with Ginny and three wonderful kids. But there had to have been moments when he, after the battle, that were really hard for him.
Oh,
and I'm curious.
In what way?
Just post-traumatic stress alone. Geez.
Oh, right.
You know, what he'd gone through. And I'm curious to what Joe has imagined about how they get to the pure happy point that they were at in the epilogue.
I always wondered if his personality was changed in any dramatic way, to think he's lived his whole life with this little piece of Voldemort inside of him, if it had any influence on who he was, and with his absence, if it changed him into a different sort of person.
I don't know, because I think the fifth book is when Harry, everyone notices Harry's all like emo and really whiny in the fifth book, and that's one of the books where Voldemort's soul was most aggressive in him. And so I think that would be indicative of that he was who he was. And then when Voldemort's soul became more active in him, it did alter him a little bit. But now with that gone, I think he'll just settle back to what he was when he was younger.
You know, for me, the part that I wonder was about is how he resolved his emotions towards Snape. I mean, we were just talking about the influence of plot lines. Here's Harry who's gone all these years hating this man. I mean, you had that moment when you understood what he had done, when they saw his pensive and all that, but how do you come to resolution with all those lingering emotions? I just think that must just have been really, I mean, obviously he named one of his children.
That's a good point.
Did he name, it was one of his children, right? Albus Severus?
Yeah.
The one that had Lily's eyes.
Yeah. I just thought that was really, that's a good topic. Was that a good conversation, Melissa, with Andrew about that?
Yeah. Andrew and I, he tends to call for like 2 seconds, and it's 3 hours later when we both realize that, you know, we've been talking about the epilogue for 25,000 minutes. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm interested. It springs all these other questions, but she needs to come back.
I know. Do it, Joe. Come on. Anytime. Oh, this is one more thing. When she, I'm still in that story of the transcript from her in Dublin. She also said that she never really heard any of the actors when she was writing the book except for Ivana Lynch. She heard the voice of Ivana as Luna when she was writing Deathly Hallows. Isn't that cool?
That's so cool.
I thought that was neat. You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, she is Luna. There's no... It's freaky.
Well, I've always said that, too, because I have all the actors and characters, I have my own versions in my head, but for some reason, Ivana and Luna are like... Like, it's so right on that they kind of lift, like, they just kind of change.
The only person I have like that, I think, is Rupert.
Rupert.
I don't know why.
Oh, Rupert.
Well,
I see. I see Rupert very much like my book around in my head, but nobody else.
My Ron's a little taller, ganglier.
Yeah.
All right, what else is going on,
Speaking of Rupert, he was just on a talk show. It was actually kind of an amusing show. It's called Al Murray's Happy Hour Show. And he said that, again, Ron Weasley is going to be doing Quidditch in Half-Blood Prince. So I know that we've all...
Yes, nice.
Yes, and he's been filming this thing.
I knew that.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that. But it's just always nice to hear when he mentions it, you know, just you kind of get that little thrill, like, yes, Weasley is our king.
Nice cover, Freck.
Huh?
Nice cover,
yeah.
Freck.
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
way to point it out, Melissa.
I'm sorry. No free passes on this show.
We haven't seen Quidditch since movie 3.
No, and it wasn't really. It was that, like, you know, when the Grimm was up in the air, right? And then they fell off. And then wasn't that the famous Memento Arrestum or whatever that was?
Memento Arrestum.
One of John's favorite scenes.
He was falling. Sorry.
Flat.
Yeah.
Flat.
that'd be exciting to have them in there.
Yeah.
You know.
Ron's doing Quidditch.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay.
The Wizarding World of Harry Potter keeps trickling out. We got a really pretty good scoop that they're starting auditions for the people who will be playing. Like through the park, there'll be characters walking through the park, and this is kind of neat. The person said that what they're going to be doing is they're going to have like duels. So like in certain spots throughout the park, they're going to be like preset things. So when they duel each other, they'll have explosion effects and stuff. So it'll be preset.
That is so cool.
That's amazing.
I'm like, yes.
Nice.
Awesome.
Like,
we all choreograph.
Yeah.
That's like, you're going to have like a random person get hit by an AK and just lay there for the rest of the show.
Oh, no.
That'd be fun.
So I mean, I already got my letter in the mail. Killed. They were, you know, they of course plan on having Dawlish there to, you know, make sure everybody's, you know, dueling properly.
And I hear that Dawlish and Gribbly Flink are going to duel.
Ooh, that would be fun. Because, see, I get the automatic casting.
You're doing both parts?
As the namesake.
You're going to do both?
I can't do both as long if they're in the same place. I can't be there at the same time, but... One or the other, I have free reign to take either character.
I want to petition Jo to use her pull to give some people like golden passes. So, yeah. I want to brazenly use our whatever faux status in
clout
society to get on the rides first.
We could do a podcast on a ride.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
The only time ever that I will openly try to abuse this podcast.
Listen to that shameless. That's like John.
Well, hell, all of us already, you know, we'll go to Disneyland and try to kill the basilisk on the Indiana Jones ride.
We just need
our Harry Potter rides, like, ASAP.
Every time I go by that snake, I'm always like, where's my rooster?
It's going to be so fun. Because the report said, too, that they're going to make a ride through Gringotts. It's based on the rails through the bank. So you could...
It has to be. You have to have the Gringotts Goblin Coaster.
That would just be so fun. I can see you up there, Melissa, trying to bat off John. You can go.
I'm there.
You know? You're awesome.
It's like in Disneyland when, like Frank was just saying, we went on it and we all started singing the Harry and the Potter song.
Yeah.
Save Ginny Weebly from the Basilisk. Because as you go to the Indiana Jones ride, it is so very much the Chamber of Secrets.
It's so cool. With vehicles and bridges and skulls.
I have not been on that ride. Is it really like that? That would be fun.
It really is.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's crazy.
There's one more thing about this.
BA and HC.
All right, what's up, Sue?
I wanted to say, this is one thing I didn't know. It said there's going to be a stage show, too, that comes from the Goblet of Fire scene in a graveyard. And I know. And I thought, she had never actually authorized performances, right, before? Is that right? So,
that's right.
Well, all bets are off for this thing.
So, that's...
Wait, from the graveyard scene?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, we get to see Voldemort come back?
Yeah.
And do that creepy spell?
Well,
isn't that scary for kids?
I would think so.
Spell, like cutting up Harry, like, let's put his blood in this cauldron. No.
Yeah, of all things to reenact on a daily basis, that?
Well, yeah.
Watching a Wormtail get his hand cut off?
But maybe it's Harry beating him.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably.
Oh,
doing
maybe.
The
I'm getting back.
But I keep remembering that old rumor. Remember how the one about, you know, there's going to be Harry Potter the musical, you know, that they want to do this. And then you get this and you think, well, maybe someday in our lifetimes they'll actually start doing these kind of crazy performances. I don't know. I thought that's kind of interesting.
It sounds like it's going to be an amazing. I just keep thinking back to that meeting that they showed us from the documentary.
Oh, right.
That Joe was in. Mm-hmm. And in the meeting, the guy was talking about how you're going to have certain areas where only if you stand in that specific spot will you hear voices and stuff.
Yeah,
if you're trying
cool.
to use technology to do all this magic stuff, so I think it's going to be great.
Our Miss Jo is amazing, too. I just want to make a quick mention. She's doing she's contributing to a book for Prince Charles. He's turning 60 this year, and so I think that's really neat that, you know, here's Jo doing all these amazing contributions. I guess it's going to celebrate his life or something. I'm not really sure, but it's kind of a cool thing.
Cool.
And Dan Radcliffe, friends, pay attention to the calendar. April 22nd, the DVD comes out for that My Boy Jack. We've had so many requests about that. It's going to be on PBS too, like 2 days before, too, that movie. But we have a whole bunch of new clips from that movie in our galleries. So it should be neat. Neat.
Awesome.
He's actually, I was really surprised. You know, I mean, it's already aired in the UK and everybody's already seen it. I think maybe parts of Canada, too, but I'm not really sure. But yeah, I was really surprised at the maturity he is exhibited. I guess, you know, in Equus, clearly he's a little bit more mature, but I don't know. That was a good part. It's interesting. So that's all I got. That's all I got for you right now.
All right, Suze.
Yep.
That was good to
good
me.
News. What are we doing now?
What do you
want to
do first?
Let's bust into maybe the Phoenix Files.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Right.
Got to save Ginny Weasley from the Basilisk. We've got to save the
the days of school again.
And we're back with Phoenix Files. And we left off at the return of Hagrid slash the mass escape from Azkaban.
Slash? Uh-huh.
What?
Sorry.
That
just being ornery,
weird.
Sorry.
Wow. Yeah.
Way to go, Melissa.
Usually it's John.
Usually it's John,
right,
but
down
it's
down
you this week.
Denominator, but...
No. I'm all flustered. I burnt an artichoke.
We can repair it after the show, John.
Can I just say that I, for the first time ever, I'm so sorry, Joe. I think that they did this better in the movies than it was in the books. The explanation of the giant thing.
The explanation of what?
The giant of Hagrid's
it was,
giant
oh,
thing.
How dare
giant.
You?
Oh,
well,
I was...
this whole huge chapter, and the whole time I'm reading it, I'm thinking, okay, I'm reading this for a reason. I'm reading all this stuff that happened for a reason because it's going to be a big deal. Because
it's fun.
Back, and then it just wasn't.
That's interesting.
It was nice. I think it was a nice way
it's
to
like
discuss giant
story.
Culture and like the dynamics of the giants, but...
It's nice to hear, but...
I mean, I guess you could call it, maybe it would have been a better entry in the Big Encyclopedia about giants.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But it's still interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Giants.
But I'm just thinking, like, the whole
it
time, like, it's got to have some big plot significance for her to take this much time, you know?
It was a bit of a departure from the main story, and... I don't remember hardly any of it. It was a book like something about like didn't Hagrid bring them like fire or something?
Braithian
Reef.
Braithian
Reef.
Well, wasn't it kind of too though? We were kind of hoping though for the Animagus kind of Hagrid kind of bluff thing going on.
She did just vanish. Where was she in the battle? Losers
she
hiding
was,
up in Beauxbatons. Beauxbatons. The French. We don't fight. No. Oh, that was horrible. I didn't mean that. Oh crap.
Well, poor Hagrid though.
Send your letters to
edit that out. I didn't
speaking of French, I've gotten a couple of emails.
No way, pal.
Italian. They're cream puffs, guys. Profiterole are cream puffs. They might have started in France. I know them as Italian because it's the same name in Italian. They're cream puffs. Just
how
FYI.
Dare you confuse the countries.
How dare I suck.
Yeah, you do.
You fail at life.
So, okay, can we talk about this movie thing? Because I kind of actually like the physical, like, from a filmmaker's point of view.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Some of the shot work that's going on during this sequence, even though it's kind of like, it's... When Harry, you know, the cast, the mysterious changing Hagrid's hut that changes, like, every time.
It's the hut of requirement.
You know? I mean, they shoot that view. Yeah, the hut of requirement. It's true! Ooh, good one! You know, we had a feature on our, from one of the companies, I believe it was Rising Sun. They showed how they blue screened that actually, you know, they go out and they shoot in that beautiful part of Scotland, just gorgeous scenery. And then they actually blue screened that and put that mysterious hut that's somewhere. No, I was just saying it's a really good feature and we still have it, so I believe somewhere.
The first time I ever saw that, they were filming in the Hagrid's hut for the third film. And it was right in the hangar, the whole hut. And they were filming in this tiny little, you know, this tiny little space. And the background was a picture, was a giant, huge resolution blow-up picture. Just made you think.
It's funny. You know, and Mr. Pratt, this is part of to you. So they, you know how they shoot the perspective things and try and make, you know, I know Robbie Coltrane, he's like on stilts. You know, then they shoot that shot perspective manipulation and all that kind of thing to make it look. But those mugs that sit on the table and the trios have a cup, are they not?
Yeah, they are.
From our cafe
Central
that
Park.
We just know
we
and
have
love.
Them out-ordered in because Hagrid is a closet Friends fan.
Nice. I could see that.
And so it's good that you noticed that because I've seen, if you look carefully in the background, you can actually see a Central Perk T-shirt. That he uses as a hand towel because it's too small for him.
Nice. But it's so funny, though, because as soon as I look at it, you know, because they're that little trio, their own little friends, group of friends, and I saw those mugs,
so
and I just cracked up, and I wondered if there was a little
one
bit
cup
of humor.
Coffee from those mugs. Jeez, man.
We've been to the Central Perk with Frankie.
That's right.
We have.
Didn't we have pictures of that
yes,
somewhere?
Yes, we have.
That was how we met you guys.
We do have pictures. That was the first
time. No, it's not how I met you.
No, I mean, that's what I met. That's when I met Sue and John for the first time.
Ah, okay.
In person.
I met Prack when I went on tour with the for Scholastic.
Oh, that's right.
What?
Yeah, way back.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And that's
Prack showed up in line at the Los Angeles podcast.
And then you jumped over the table and gave me a hug, and I felt special.
I did.
Aw.
Because he had done the I Will Pants You Now thing.
I remember that.
Oh, wow. Imagine if I almost didn't draw that either. Like, I got home from work, and I was tired, and I was having a difficult time drawing Harry, and I almost said, like, forget it. But I stood up late, and I did it. And so I'm so glad I did.
Yay!
I was telling him that's exactly how I got started on Leaky 2. I was just staying up one night and fussing around on the computer, and good thing I did.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
That's how everybody ends up on Leaky.
Pretty much. Something to do with fussing around late at night.
Sure.
I don't know.
Okay.
So this movie, this part I thought was nice. First they show those beautiful models that Cenobite makes of the Hogwarts, and then we show this hut, but then we have the tail of the giants, but then we get this line that Hagrid, and they use this in the trailer, and everyone's
was
like,
it?
What? It's strange and out there, Harry. You know, Hagrid goes, it's just strange and out there, Harry, just like the last time.
A big storm's coming.
You know, I mean, it was just so dramatic.
Hagrid,
you know,
the prophet, suddenly he's a king of divination. He's like, I can feel it on my knees. I have some arthritis and some dark magic's coming.
My knees are so big. I can feel it from a mile away.
Yeah.
I do feel that in my knees. Anyway.
You can feel weather in your knees, Martha?
I can, because I have bad knees. I have an adolescent disorder in my knees. And so when it's going to rain, my knees tweak.
It's like a superpower, though.
It is.
I'm kind of jealous.
It's like on Mean Girls, when she can tell when it's raining.
That's right.
But a little less.
Okay. Yeah.
A little more
safety
there.
What else?
No, I was just going to say that was so funny. So they show that dramatic wind, and then all of a sudden, here's the part I like. You know, they have the big dramatic boom, lightning flashes. I mean, that was kind of like an obvious transition. But then, and then we go to this part.
Yes.
I know, John, I know you like this scene. Because that arm, that gigantic, most hugest, ugliest,
pulsating.
Oh, yeah.
Dark mark.
It's pretty
good. It is. You can see, like, if you look at it, watch it again, it, like...
She licks it.
Thing, and
it's true that when you get a tattoo, it does... It does
wasn't that an
scars
awesome?
A little bit. Well, because it is a scar. It does rise above your skin a little bit.
Yeah.
But I would imagine since it's a magic tattoo and it's, like, activating, it would be more, like, bump, bump, aggressive.
Do you think, like, it takes on, like, a taste when it's activated, though? And that's why she was... She hadn't had it for so long.
That's
like
what
they do
cherry.
With the Death Eater marks. They imbue them with taste so that if you get stuck in prison, you still have something to lick.
Yes, there you go. Aww.
That's a weird sentence.
It tastes like evil.
I know it is, Frack. Don't take it any further, okay? Don't go any further with that.
Although they are in solitary.
One of those sentences that you come out with and you go, hmm.
Yeah.
Not how I intended.
So Bellatrix is licking herself. Then what happens?
And then, blam!
Somebody bombard a Maximus.
That's
all it takes.
They never say, like, how it happened, who did it. Obviously Voldemort did it. I mean, come on.
You'd think it was the Death Eaters or something.
Well, I think the combination of
Was Voldemort flying by then?
I don't know.
I don't know if he's flying by then, but the whatchamacallits, the Dementors aren't going to be, you know, they've probably switched allegiance by then. So they would allow them
probably.
To be able to use their magic a little more effectively.
See, I wonder what happened right after that part where Bellatrix is out there laughing. There's nothing but Dementors out there. So then she's like, okay, now what do I do?
Exactly.
I'm still stuck here in this room. I can't jump. No wand.
Her Onomagus form is a butterfly, and she flew.
She would never be a butterfly.
She'd be like a tarantula, I think.
She'd be something.
Hornet.
I could see her as a giant squid.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Don't tell the giant squid.
No, not the giant squid.
Oh,
but I guess it is.
No, she's totally a black widow. She's a black widow, man. She's just gross.
Okay, so mass breakout from Azkaban. Somebody did a giant cookie monster chomp out of the Azkaban.
Mm-hmm.
Azkaban, the first time we saw it, the picture looked like it was on the side of a waterfall, but this just looks like it's in a swirling...
I like the Azkaban. The big triangle just kind of in the middle of the ocean. Nice.
It's like an A, huh?
Yeah, an A. without the crossbar or whatever that's called. I should know what that's called, like topography, but I forgot in a couple of years.
You should, Brock.
Very cool. And then we have that, you know, and then they have another transition, you know, with the whole newspaper.
I love the newspaper montage cool. stuff.
I don't know. I liked it.
Like I've said before a million times, it's just because I like the typography in it. So I kind of... Yeah, I just nerd out. Like, if you could, it's like doing
really?
Motion graphics on paper. It's like, if you could print something and with the intent of it changing color and scrolling, that'd be awesome. But, you know, Wizarding World, what are you going to do?
That would be sweet.
It's like a printable web page.
Is that all we're talking about this
moving.
Week?
Yeah.
So we can push on to some mechanical stuff. Sweet. Okay, well, let's go to do some beatbox beers.
Cool. Beatbox beers. Let's apparate out of here.
Quick! Quick! Back to Bit by Bit, where we take a bit of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows and talk about it just a little bit at a time. And this week we're still continuing on with our friend Creature.
Who becomes our friend in this chapter.
Yes, he does.
Aw.
He really does.
He does.
He does.
He's the cutest thing.
Little friend now. Little friend.
I used to hate him so much.
This was really...
I used to hate him
I
so much.
I never hated Creature.
Well, five, I hated him.
I didn't
I've
like him.
I've always loved Creature.
But this...
Well, I had a hard time enjoying Creature once the whole, like, oh, he tricked Sirius
right.
into...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's lovely.
Oh, who could blame him?
I could blame him.
I'm kidding. Creature sucks.
No, he doesn't suck anymore.
Okay.
Could you imagine Creature, like, when the battle is done, trying to fend off all the house elves who want to give him the entire content of the kitchen to bring to Harry? You know?
Yeah.
Like, poor Creature, he's attached to Harry and everybody wants to thank him, and so he's
get
like...
Get out of here.
Yeah. Really cute.
Anyway. Creature no like us.
But she really changed it on our heads. I mean, she really took everything and spit it right on our heads. And this chapter, or this part of the chapter, I thought was extremely pivotal and very profound and really moved me.
It was just beautiful because it really validated the whole spew stuff that we've heard for three books.
Yeah.
And just the whole fact that Hermione was she, you know, everyone's saying that she didn't understand the house elves, like, they don't mind working, yada, 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 like, it's not slavery to them, they enjoy it. And everyone thought she didn't understand the house elves, but she understood them best. She understood that all he was doing was parroting the beliefs of the person who was nicest to him. And it's like, so you can't really blame him, it's just that, of course he's going to, like, it's all he's known is this aggressive behavior towards him. Of course he's going to be with someone who's more gentle and nicer to him, or at least gives him the time of day and shows him affection. So he just parrots what they believe. I really enjoyed that, and it really validated the whole spew stuff for me, at least.
Well, it's interesting, because it's not like he didn't fawn like crazy over Bellatrix and Mistress Black. You know, it's not like he was only fond of Regulus, but it's interesting seeing how Regulus's belief system, he just took that to be, like, the proper way.
Yeah.
And was the most loyal to Regulus. I'm sorry, this chapter really, like Sue said, it really, really got me. The idea that when Harry said, well, how did you get back? And he's like, what are you talking about? My master told me to get back.
Yeah.
Like.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That was interesting. It was just kind of like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
There was no problem, no issue. I came back.
Yeah. What to do?
That was,
and it was so cool, too. I liked how that was Ron Weasley that figured it out, how he got back, by the way. You talk about Spew.
Yeah.
Ron did figure it out.
Aww.
You know, he loves those house elves. Pays attention to them. And later we learned.
Or he just got lucky and stumbled upon the right answer.
No. No.
But Regulus, like, he went into this. Like Creature said, it was an honor for him to volunteer Creature. It was what he thought was totally right. And it was only when Voldemort went back on his word or at least showed that he was going to be rude or rude or murderous to Creature.
Yeah.
rude. That it was his affection to Creature that turned Regulus around. Like that's really touching to me.
Yeah.
It's just really interesting because there's all this ideology in that Regulus is parroting, like creatures are less than humans, than wizards. Wizards are the superior race, etc. Yet when, and he's fine with that, and yet when it comes down to somebody you know, Voldemort leaving Creature to die on that island, that's what turns Regulus from those ways.
And again, love was a downfall for Voldemort.
Yeah. Aww.
You know, and another thing about this chapter, which I just thought, and this is something that I really want to ask your opinions about to me, because my son talked to me about this chapter, and it was really disturbing to him. I mean, the imagery in which he's writing, you're talking about him leaving this creature to die.
Yeah.
To die. I mean, the inhumanity of that. And Andrew was extremely upset about that. But then he asked me this, and I want to get your thoughts. Did Regulus kill himself? Did he willingly stay there to
die?
You think
he sacrificed himself?
Was that a form of suicide?
I don't know that he...
No.
He was dragged under by the fury.
It's not suicide when you sacrifice yourself for someone else.
But why didn't he tell Creature?
And even suicide,
really,
you have to be...
I mean, he didn't... I don't think he went there with the intention of...
dying?
Of...
It's like asking, did Lily commit suicide because
right.
she had the option to live?
Right.
No.
Right, right. He sacrificed himself for his house elf, which is so against what he was supposing to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like me.
Well, it just shows that he was caught up in the glamour of it, not realizing what they were really about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it was just kind of, and it was just prestige, and he was so caught up, probably with a contrast to Sirius, of pleasing his parents and being the proper Slytherin, the proper black, mm-hmm. that he just kind of got caught up in this. I don't know the ritual rather than realizing what it was. And when he actually grew up and kind of thought of it for himself, and he couldn't embrace it. And he's like, this isn't what I'm about. So,
and you know, even
I think Regulus was much more serious, much close. Regulus and Sirius were very much the same person, like, but just different circumstances. Cause like they both stood up and they were both very bold and made sacrifices for the people they love.
And even knowing that Creature has gotten back from that place alone by himself once before and probably could do it again.
Mm-hmm.
He still sends Creature home.
Mm-hmm. But
sacrifices himself.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, my son didn't understand that at that point when you're reading it, he's like, well, why couldn't Regulus figure out a way to try and save himself too? You know, did he, and he knowingly let those, you know, dark creatures get him. And it's just, I thought that was extremely profound writing in a part. I don't know. I didn't know if anyone...
And I think, too, it's kind of one of those things that, like, you know, he's not stupid. He realizes what he's doing, and he realizes that the Dark Lord's going to catch up to him. So rather than giving the Dark Lord the satisfaction of taking his life, leaving it ambiguous. Like, you know, he did it, and he had his house elf get away, and now at least it's going to put a kink in his plans. Because, like, if they look for him and they can't find him, you know, just take that little bit of satisfaction away from his, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how that only when it comes home to them, when somebody close to them is hurt, do what they're really standing for. Right. You know, only Bellatrix, Lady Bellatrix, is the one who said that she would offer up her own son and blah, blah,
yeah.
blah. But look, you have Regulus with Creature, Narcissa with Draco. You know, they're all a bunch of hypocrites. They can spout it. But when it comes, when their ideologies affect their own, that's when they lose.
Sure.
It.
Totally right.
That form of hypocrisy, I don't mind, though.
Neither do I.
It causes them to,
probably
to not kill people. I'm okay with it. I don't know why my voice got so high, but whatever.
John, you've been quiet.
I'm just deep in thought, which isn't helpful on a podcast.
No.
No.
Well, I know that we had talked about this theory even before the book came out, about that is kind of what had happened to Regulus, and I think a lot of people were kind of pleased when they read that, but at the same time, I just remember being so sad and just horrified when I was reading. Didn't want that part to be true, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. It definitely had me thinking more about how everybody had been treating Creature and how misunderstood he'd been this whole time. I mean, not being able to tell anybody about any of that, having to live with that secret. That would drive anybody crazy. I don't care what you are.
That's true. And the fact that he couldn't do the one last thing that his master sacrificed himself to do. He couldn't figure out how to destroy the stupid locket. So it's like that, God, that had to drive him crazy.
So do you think that is why Regulus sacrificed himself? Because he knew that if he got away with the locket, he might, A, not be able to get it open, B, be findable by Voldemort, so Voldemort would retrieve that locket. So maybe he thought that
that's true.
The magic binding
Creature
to the locket would protect the locket from being found by Voldemort.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and Voldemort thinks Creature's dead.
Right.
So, like, that's a very good point.
You know, like there's that strong magic saying, my master told me not to tell anybody about this. My master told me to destroy it. It's almost, I feel like it's almost like a secret keeper thing. Like, Voldemort cannot find
it
now.
Interesting.
Mm. You know, you wonder, too, we still have never understood what that potion was. You know, and that here poor creature had suffered so terribly. And you wonder what Regulus, you know?
Yeah. I think it made you relive your worst memories. I think it made Dumbledore relive what happened at his grave, at the grave of his sister.
Yeah.
With Grindelwald and, you know, not when Grindelwald.
Yeah, and if not your worst memory, it'll just cause your worst fears manifest themselves.
Yeah.
Whether it's like kind of like a Boggart, you know, Boggart's just become the scariest.
That would make sense. That would fit the theme.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then creature. He tries to bow to them, and he gives a little spasm at Hermione, like he's trying, you know.
Yeah.
Poor creature, just a little love, and boom,
he got that locket back, and it was just such a something that belonged to his master that he loved so dearly, and he'd suffered all, like you were talking about, he'd suffered all this with that knowledge all this time, and that's. I wasn't expecting that turn. That was for sure. It was really kind of cool to see.
No.
Yeah.
It's amazing, this huge war is raging, and in the hard center of the resistance, of the good guys, the biggest thing to make a difference is three people comforting and caring after a poor little house elf. It's not some big act of heroism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the biggest act in this war at this moment is just sitting with this little elf while he cries.
Right.
You know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Small act of kindness can have great ramifications, and that's wonderful. I think that's a wonderful lesson for children, too. I mean, like Andy, we talked about this for a long time, you know?
Yeah,
it's true.
Me too.
One good deed is worth 1,000 brilliant years.
It is. It really is.
Yeah. All right, guys. Is that enough for this?
Yes. Yes. It is.
I think we're ready to talk about what's-her-face.
Our ex-staff member.
Miss Simmel.
Love her.
All right.
Awesome. Today's podcast is brought to you by AudibleKids.com, the Internet's best source for audio children's books. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like Pottercast. And now you can find children's books there as well. Log on to AudibleKids.com/Pottercast to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, go to AudibleKids.com/Pottercast for your free audiobook.
And now it's time for Canon Conundrums. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
Again for
Canon Conundrums.
Canon Conundrums.
Are you mad? On a night like tonight?
Sorry.
Okay. Guys, no.
What are we conundruming about this time, ladies and gents?
Our recently departed staff member, Sybil Trelawney.
The drunk.
That was we should tell everyone who actually may not turn their computer on that day why she's our ex-staff member.
On April 1st, she joined us on staff, and she gave us all bad news tips and predicted news that was already out there. And, you know,
did she have any moments of clarity where she got a crazy voice on, predicted something like insanely accurate?
No,
towards
but
the end,
she did.
Said something like, "I'm going to be fired and leaving," but it was really weird.
Right. Yeah, it was really weird. But she was drinking on the job. We had to get rid of her. But we thought we'd figure out what house she was in here today.
Oh, okay. Hufflepuff.
I actually agree with you on this, John. I really do. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
For some reason,
Let me disguise my shop.
Okay.
Huh?
I know, sorry, I'm in total shock over here that Sue thinks that she was a Hufflepuff.
See, I think we can immediately rule out Gryffindor.
That's true. For some reason, I assumed she was Ravenclaw, but I have no idea why. Because I actually think about
it. You.
Like, just intuitively, it's just like Ravenclaw. I just assumed. Like, she wasn't Ravenclaw?
Me too.
And I can't, why do you think so?
I don't think she's particularly brave.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything about her that's overly ambitious. I don't think she really pushes for the stars there. I don't see any scraps of hard work or loyalty. It's not that she's not a loyal person. There's just nothing to show us. You know, I mean, the battle, but it wasn't just Hufflepuffs fighting in the battle. I just think that she is, when she does get in her little mode, she is very clever about the way she goes about things. The things that she says are sometimes true, sometimes not, and she's like Miss Cleo. She always says something that's just vague enough that it's going to be true no matter what.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point. Like, she is rather clever about the predictions that she kind of makes up on her own. And I think it's hilarious that whenever she makes a proper prediction, she's like, that can't be right. Like when she was in the sixth book, when she's reading her cards, and it's early in the book too, when Harry's hiding behind something, and they're like, a dark-haired boy. It's like, that can't be right. And then he's like right there, and then the lightning struck tower. That can't be right. And it's like, it's hilarious.
See, to me, though, but those are reasons why she's a Hufflepuff. She doubts her own.
Why?
See, this is not disparaging my own house, but I just don't think, I think that sometimes that intelligence isn't something you normally equate to Hufflepuff, and you just kind of go along and just say, oh, well, that can't possibly be right. But yes, she still does these things. And so that's why I think she's more.
I don't think that's a Hufflepuff. I don't think it's a Hufflepuff. I don't think doubting yourself is a Hufflepuff.
No, I'm just saying, but she keeps, my point is, no, I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying that she says, oh, well, that can't be right, but yet she still persists in her beliefs of whatever she's doing. I also think that, she just never gives up. Okay, everybody mocks her. She doesn't, she could have just kind of given up and everything. So I think that, to me, is like she's just going to kind of keep plugging right along. I mean, I thought at first she was maybe a Ravenclaw, but I don't know. And I also see her.
I'm not with you on that, because by that reasoning, then everybody hates Snape, then he's a Hufflepuff.
Sure.
By that reasoning, people doubt Dumbledore, then he's a Hufflepuff, because he doesn't just pack it in. You know, Hagrid's clearly a Hufflepuff, because he does come out of
what
it.
What house was Hagrid?
After.
He's Gryffindor.
Damn.
But see, another reason why.
I mean, was that mentioned in canon?
I think she said it in chat, right? Did she say it somewhere? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
Did she say it? I think she did. Well, I mean, he speaks for Gryffindor at the end of book six.
That's true. And then he was the honorary head of, that's right.
Yeah.
Anyway. But I'm going back to Trelawney. Hufflepuffs just have more substance. You know, their element is earth. It's just they're there. They have, they have grit. They're just kind of, and Trelawney is a little too flippant for me to be a Hufflepuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And she's up in the tower.
She relies. She relies on things other than reason and work. She relies on some mystic connection to the beyond, which that to me says it's a total non-Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Like you said, they're
well, I think that's a good point. I guess my reasoning why I instantly thought she was a Hufflepuff is that she just teaches everybody. Okay, y'all are going to be great divination. Y'all are just going to do this.
She kind of railed into Hermione there.
Yeah.
Your soul is dry as the pages of the books you desperately clean.
No teacher, including McGonagall, has ever been so vicious about a student's lack of talent in a particular arena.
Snape has.
Even if it's not even called for. But like with Hermione, she wasn't very good at it. But
okay, maybe she's not.
You know, just because Hermione doubted her, she said, I your aura is murky, and she gets defensive. It's not very.
I guess for some reason I would. Never mind.
What?
Well, I was gonna say, like Ravenclaws, I would imagine they would think high of themselves, not in a bad way. Like
confidence.
In a little bit. I'm a little pompous.
Well, that doesn't mean just because you're smart doesn't mean you're arrogant and rude either. So
I'm awesome, guys. I'm just kidding.
You don't have to be arrogant and rude and be smart.
That was horrible. We need to take it out. I feel bad now.
I don't know.
I'm going to stop talking.
No, what do you think?
What's
I
you
think John should say something.
I'm trying to think of how she could be a Slytherin, but there's no way. As much as I'd love to call her one,
I get this one.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
No, I don't know.
I thought I could immediately rule out Slytherin and Gryffindor, but I don't know. I mean, she was pretty brave. At the battle, lobbing her crystal balls.
But so was Neville. Although, he's Gryffindor. I always think of Neville as a bystander Hufflepuff in my head. It's just...
No.
Well, yeah, I think...
But I know he's like the true Gryffindor.
Well,
he is, but
Joe
I always... Him and the trio do kind of break up a little bit, because like Ron would probably be Gryffindor, and then Hermione Ravenclaw, and Harry Slytherin, and Neville Hufflepuff, if you had to, like, kind of see what houses they would have been in either, yeah. I would think it'd be that way. Even though I think Ron's kind of Hufflepuffy as well. He's very loyal.
Puffy.
I don't know. I still...
But Sybil, I mean, there's also that she's constantly compared to, like Bugs, and she's in that tower. It's got a very, she's got a very air element mm-hmm. to her, and I feel like that's Ravenclaw as well.
Yeah, Ravenclaw
you know?
Owns air.
Yeah, I would think, if I had to pick, I would pick Ravenclaw just because for, you know, some of the more of the same reasons why I agree with Luna being a Ravenclaw. It's just that that quest for... Her knowledge, be it the bizarre or
that's
the
true.
Obscure.
Yeah, so like her knowledge is the knowledge yet to be delivered, but her quest is to get there first to, you know, like,
and
just figure it out.
And she obsesses over it, exactly. So it's the wanting to know
but
things
I don't see that when a Trelawney at
that
all.
No one else does or that you
don't
already.
I don't see
already.
That at her at all, though.
That's a good argument.
I mean, Trelawney does not seem want to seem that she's seeking out to learn and practice and you know, hone her you know, fortune-telling skills. It seems to me that she's hottie in the sense that she thinks she has it right, but I don't see her, like, actively...
I don't know. We always... When we see her, when Harry sees her a couple of times when nobody's looking at her, she's doing the tarot.
Yeah.
And trying to discern
and
what it means.
She has to practice.
Which, when nobody's looking, you know?
Yeah.
But she's clearly, like, yearning knowledge, whether she's practicing or not. She's clearly trying to ascertain knowledge that
yeah.
she doesn't have, you know?
It's just the nature of her profession.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of her skills. But of divination, it's the knowledge of the future. It's knowledge.
Mm, maybe so.
Whether or not you're good at it.
So she kind of
yeah.
sucks at it.
Yeah.
But.
Notwithstanding.
I don't know.
No, but I could totally see her in the Ravenclaw Tower just sitting there, like, kind of, like, staring around, you know,
yeah.
trying to...
Yeah, I guess this is good for me, because I always assumed she was Ravenclaw, just like, yeah, Ravenclaw, but then when I actually sat down to think about the details, I was like, why do I think Ravenclaw? But this is very helpful for me.
Yeah.
Cause...
I'm pretty sold. I'm pretty convinced. You guys?
Okay, but I'm not.
I'm not. Said that to you.
Still think she's
no,
a Hufflepuff.
I'm just not. I'm not
right,
completely
well,
sold
one,
on Hufflepuff. No,
think.
Please don't
I'm
put
what
in my mouth. I'm not completely sold that she's not... 100% a Hufflepuff, because you did bring up some good valid points. There might be some elements of Ravenclaw in her. So I'm actually, now I'm more undecided
yeah.
than I was
she can
before.
Be a Ravenpuff.
She could be. Yeah.
A Ravenpuff.
Ooh.
Or a Huffleclaw.
Well, we know she's not a Slither Griffin. No Slither Griffins.
She's a what?
She's not a Griffin or a Slither.
Okay. She's not a Slither Griffin.
She's not a Slithering Griffin.
Yeah.
Or a Grifferin.
All right.
Geez, those are confusing. So,
okay.
I'm thoroughly convinced and confused.
I'm not confused. I have clarity.
Which means it's a Canon Conundrums, and it's time to go.
Okay, goodbye. It's the drum.
Bum, 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 bum. It's the
drum. So, John, we heard from our friend Cheryl this week.
We did. Cheryl?
We did. She said to let you know... And I quote, I listened to podcasts last night, and you could just tell that co-host of yours that T's aren't tied to age, but to wisdom, which means really I should have 10 T's by now, while he would be known as Ho John. However, if he begs my forgiveness, I may deign to grant it.
Oh, deign.
Well, this
Surely.
Is Cheryl. She has words.
That's funny.
Cheryl.
And it's ho, not in the lascivious sense, but ho in the sense there's no T. So it's lacking.
The absence
yes,
of wisdom.
Yes, lacking T.
Yes.
Ho, John. I love it.
Quite amused.
Who would have known John the ho?
Just kidding. John the ho. I was no indication of that.
That's not what I heard.
What?
Oh,
no, you
didn't.
No, you didn't.
Uh-oh.
No, you didn't.
She was there.
I did. I'm sorry. Okay, we'll move on.
Oh,
wow, two grand.
Claws are out.
Oh, man, he...
Badger's out.
You know. Okay.
Badger's out of the bag.
Yeah.
On a silly note...
Yes.
Ooh.
The other day, I was subbing, and I drew Wandicorn on the board, and I had a bunch of the kids. Normally, when I sub, I'll draw a picture on the board with my name. And they're like,
what's this?
And I was telling them, oh, it's Wandicorn. They're like, oh. And then I got to thinking, does Hogwarts have substitutes? And I really want to sub at Hogwarts now.
Awesome.
So
you think that they would need substitutes sometimes, you know?
Yeah, Grubbly Plank was a substitute.
That's right,
Grubbly
they
Plank
did.
Grubbly Plank substitute.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, when Remus couldn't make it, you know, to his classes.
Snape.
Well.
Snape?
Yeah. But then who would take his classes?
I guess
me.
The schedules aligned.
Kidding. Yeah. So I want to be Mr. Franco or Professor Franco at Hogwarts.
Professor Franco.
You think?
That's awesome.
I wonder if Dumbledore ever substitutes at any point if it's necessary. Could you imagine how cool that class would be?
Yeah.
You'd be
I always wanted Dumbledore to teach Defense Against the Dark Arts or something.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Oh. He couldn't do it, though, because he knew it was cursed, so if he taught it, he'd have to leave Hogwarts. Dun,
yep.
Dun, dun.
Oh.
Well, once he knew he was going to die, he should have taught it in the sixth year.
That would have been a nice twist. And that could... There
you
was,
know?
Oh, good thinking.
I feel trapped up here sometimes.
Aww.
Yeah. Aww. Totally. He should have done it.
So how do you say their names? It was still cursed when the Carrows, the evil twin brothers, sisters, whatever they were.
The Carrows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was still cursed so. Then? I know that's a random
question. Yeah.
I think
the
curse
was
probably
only
bring
that Voldemort's
year. Gone, but...
Okay. Just random. Sorry.
Yeah.
It does bring up the questions of which magic ends when you die and which doesn't. Like, permanent sticking terms don't
question.
End.
Yeah.
You
anything
know?
That has the word permanent in the term, I guess, is okay.
Permanent maximum.
Yeah. Permanent maximum.
I would imagine, though, like, for this curse that he did, it's because he wanted to teach it, and now that he's no longer able to teach it, that it wouldn't stick. Like, when he was alive, or not dead, unquote-unquote, you know, it was different because he was still tied to the Cursed, so I think some of his spells that were more complicated remained intact. But, like, when he died, like, the intention of him teaching it is no longer possible. He no longer exists. But I think it's getting into the metaphysical aspects of spell work a little too much. It's a little heavy-handed for the drums. We need something more light-handed, light-hearted.
Aww.
Well, how about an update on the acting troupe?
That's a good
Ooh.
Thing to talk about!
Yes.
Anybody auditioned for that? I think we had a few dozen of good auditions in there. We were going to start playing those, I believe, next week.
Nice.
And have all kinds of fun with that. And the story is coming along really well. The outline for it, Meg sends her best. Says that she's getting really into the story, and she's loving
Albus Severus. Yeah.
And
can we have a refresher on the premise?
No.
Okay. That's good. Keep us...
Because I don't know.
Okay.
But, no, the premise is that this is a story taking place somewhere around epilogue time.
Nice.
With these folks, and we're casting those characters. And maybe the four of us might be a character. Who knows?
I'm going to be Rose.
She sent me...
Daddy!
Meg and I have a long history of talking out canon behind the scenes stuff with each other, so she sent me... a couple of emails, and we started talking like 30 pages or something of hashing out what would happen, and it's you wait, she brings the goods, Meg.
Very excited.
I'm excited to hear it.
So she'll be moving on that next week. I will be in New York next week with Melissa, so we can house each other while she's trying to write something.
You know, seriously, you're always here when I'm trying to work. I have a deadline of April 21st. I should be doing nothing else right now but finishing my book, and you're going to be here, so I'm going to be mean.
So, lame, I believe.
No, you can just have to stay out of my way.
Mushko, be guarding
on a battle royale.
Yeah, you can put up my blinds. I'll buy my blinds. You can put them up, and you can get ingredients every day for what we're going to cook that night.
Oh, perfect. Let's make salsa.
No. Did we ever tell that story?
Two times I've been to Melissa's. We go to her little grocery store produce section. Like, let's make salsa.
Ukraine.
So we get the peppers and the onions and the everything to make salsa. And it just sits in her fridge the whole week.
We want to buy the ingredients, and then we're like, oh, now we have to make the salsa.
Yeah. Well, you for sure make darn good guacamole.
I want to try some of this guacamole. I've been on the guacamole kick for the last month. Any guacamole I get my hands on, I just inhale. Which is horrible because it's so fattening, but it's good fat at least.
You have no idea how good it is.
Melissa, don't talk about that when you're that far away. can't talk about it.
John knows how to make it. He can make it for you.
No,
what's
saying.
That, guacamole?
Yeah.
I've never made it before.
Not
I have no idea.
I don't even need a Nelly hands to prepare it.
I say my guacamole like it means anything. Anybody with hands can make this.
I made guacamole once.
I'm doubting my cooking of produce after today. Poor guacamole. My poor artichoke. Those are expensive. They're like $4 each. These aren't things, and if they're destroyed, I probably got maybe 10% of the fruit out of them combined.
Fruit?
Someone failed at herbology today.
No. Get me out of here.
We were talking about how cooking is a lot like Ocean's Class, and it was fun.
It is.
We were crushing garlic and then dicing it properly, and then when I stirred the sauce, I stirred it 3 times clockwise in 1 counter. Let it simmer until it changed color. Yeah. Characteristic of a swirl.
Exactly.
Steam. I don't know.
Hey, is there an update on our Friends for Sale little contest thing?
Oh, that's
right. Yeah. As
Who
of this recording, we have 4 different people owning us, which is not...
Well, let's double check one more time. Maybe someone that has at least 2 of us and they can win.
Alejandro Martinez owns me right now. He bought me for $206,000. I'm flattered.
That's a, nice. Now, everybody, let's just remember,
who owns
this
me?
Is real money. We're not asking you to spend any of our
money. Thank God.
Emily Ward
Don't
owns
take
me.
Facebook money. I'm owned by somebody named Sarah Arant.
Well, they've been going back and forth buying. Sarah bought me. Oh, if only Sarah owned me right now, she'd probably win. But it's each person's owned by someone else.
Aww.
Does Sarah own Sue?
Yep. So the contest will carry on from next week. Well, who owns Susie? What I wrote down was... Oh, is it Phil Lauren from Lauren
yes.
Girls?
Yes,
it
Yay!
Is.
Nice. She bought you for like about $130,000?
No, Sue's up to like $100 and something.
Oh, Kara owns you now.
$130,000,
yeah. I thought you just said $30,000. I'm like, what?
No.
Still have issues with this whole thing.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I'm thrilled not because I love Lauren, but I mean, people.
But you said they couldn't make you do anything, but it says, welcome to Friends for Sale. Using Friends for Sale, you can buy and sell your friends, make your newly purchased pets, poke, dropkick, and karate chop your other friends.
Yes.
Karate chop?
I like to make all of my pets flirt, tickle, spank, other things to each other. It's fun.
Well, I don't get that. I did not get permission.
I've made Jason flirt and pinch about, you know, 6 people already.
Jason who?
Huh?
What? Jason who?
Jason McDonald, our friend out here with pink hair on. You'll see. Maybe anybody who logs into
Jordan McDonald?
No, Jason.
Oh, okay.
Whose class name is also McDonald.
I think it was.
I guess
Jordan
McDonald too.
Okay. Yeah. No, this is a weird little game.
It was weird. No one won. You guys weren't aggressive.
I gotta
enough.
Buy someone.
Oh.
Can I buy Emily? Can I buy my owner?
You can. That's very common.
Ooh,
people
I'm
buy
gonna do
each
that.
Other.
Hey, Alejandro, I'm coming to get you right now. Hold on.
Sweet.
Let's do this. I bought him.
Gasp.
I
oh,
just
no.
bought someone,
Melissa.
No. He was only $1,000.
He's only.
That's it.
Melissa, don't make him feel bad. Gosh.
Well, it just means a lot of people haven't bought him yet.
Set them all free.
This will help.
Just so wrong.
You know what's crazy is that you can. You can set them free.
You can.
And you lower their value down to $500.
Oh, I was going to set them free.
If you,
no,
set
no,
them
no.
Free?
You don't want to do that.
Oh, that's an insult.
So I'm totally would lose if I played this game. Is this what you're saying?
You would lose all the hundreds and thousands of value you've accumulated.
Ooh, I want to buy someone I don't like and then set them free.
No, that's mean.
That's terrible.
John's been around me too long to Slytherin.
Well,
because
then,
well, okay.
then you lose all
I
your own
him
money,
now.
Too.
How do I make him do something?
you find the person you want to poke or whatever, and then you say poke them, and then you say who do you want to poke them, and then you select any of your pets. And then you say, what do you want to do? And you'd be like, oh, I want to hit him in the head with the frying pan. And then if it's in there, you can do that.
What? How do you do that?
Terrible!
Yeah, well, there's a little drop down, and it says, you know, let's make Jason pants Jordan or whatever, and then you click it and then it does it.
What? How do you do that?
Wait.
It's all very confusing.
Okay, I'm gonna do something right now. Hang on. Alright, wait. No, okay, wait. How do I do this?
Yeah,
tell me again.
I just bought Lewis here, okay? So I'll say, I want to go to, I'm going to go to Jason. Okay, I'm going to say poke Jason, and drop down, like, who's going to poke Jason? I'm going to say Lewis. And I say, what do you want him to do? Like, let's say, give a wet willy. And you click that one, and then Lewis just gave Jason a wet willy.
A wet willy is your finger.
Oh, well, what's a wet willy with your tongue then?
You get your finger wet, and you spit on your finger, and you put it in someone's ear. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Alejandro just drop kicked you.
Aw. Oh.
This is not right.
It's fun. Anyway, what
something
the hell
very wrong
we
about
spent
this?
5 minutes about this.
but
it's a lot of fun, and there's links on podcast.com to it if you want to check it
there
out.
There are?
I just in my profile. Because I'm a hoe. Like,
you put it in your profile on podcast?
I don't have a profile
on podcast.
Yeah, you need one. We'll set you up.
I'm sad.
You put it in your profile on podcast?
No, I put it in the
shameless.
Show notes.
It never ends. It's
you are
never
terrible.
Ends.
I need to keep cooking. Are we done? This is silly.
Okay, go cook. Goodbye. Everybody keep twiddling those freaking dials.
Keep twiddling them dials, kids.
The next password will be artichoke.
Oh.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night.
We've missed it.
Bobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now. If you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.
We drop it out, we hop it in, stop the beat, let me begin. Headquarters, headquarters, how the feet, how the flat. If there's one thing we lack, it's an address on the map. OOTBGASG. At Grimmo Place, we be chillin' on the streets, we're killin' villains. We the one, drop the beat. I sharpen your skills like a werewolf's teeth. I'm the secret keeper at Grimmo Place. You have to drop the magic words to get to these gates.
Cause they gotta eat me. I gotta admit, them things ain't palatable. Takes all I got to stop them in my mandible. I hate harming innocent creatures. I wish I could go back to being a teacher.
Now let's hear from the man who's integral to my final plan. His name is Severus. You cannot mess with this. Is he good? Is he evil? Is it possible he's either? I even let him kill me, such a masterful deceiver.
I'm Snape. Snape. Severus Snape. I'm grim and I'm slim and I wear a dark cape. I'm not a fan of children, but mostly Potter, the arrogant hotshot Hogwarts squatter. He's got no talent. He's all dumb luck. They say he's just like his father. Yeah, they both suck. So anybody with a brain can see the little brat just bothers me.
I passed the mic to my brother, an original member of the Order, an admiral dude whose lifestyle's true, here to lend you some advice on living your life, Abe.
Oh yeah, before Dumbledore here, gonna give you a big thank you and a big shout out for the newest gang and the best of people that we got riding up over here, and the name of our group is known as the Order of the Goat. Order of the Goat. We'll
Quack!